You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, I keep screwing the music up when I bring Nielsen on. I need to find something appropriate to kind of Vietnam music, right? Like, so what is this? Is not Vietnam music. I don't know. It's got to be crazier music than that. Before we get going with Nielsen, I told you I'd play a cut of Cora Marlanis talking last night, and he wasn't in the episode. He wasn't in the second one either. So he shows up at the tail end of the third episode, and let me just kind of play a cut, his cut. That's, hey,
it's about the political powers at the time was, first of all, the line.
Okay, hold on. That's his voice. Hey, Nielsen.
Well, the chances, yes, of victory.
How about Dave Galloway's goddamn fortune in life? He Hueys in. To two units that are surrounded. They're surrounded like maybe a couple hundred to thousands surrounded, right? So it's not like this is a kind of a fair fight. And Galloway helos into both of them, and he comes out of both of them without a scratch.
I seen him at Walter Reed, and when they wrote the book, he and the colonel wrote the book about the Battle of Grand Valley in 65. And it first came out, I went to the Army-Navy Club with a Vietnam buddy of mine, and we listened to the two of them talk about the battle and talk about what they did. And I'll tell you, they were incredible, and they were as open and honest as anybody I've ever seen. And when you see him on MPTV or public television, it's even more amazing what he did. And he diddy bops in there, and all of a sudden is in the middle of the shit, big time, and he's in it for 3 or 4 days. And before that, he's up at a special forces camp that got overrun.
you're like, look, Galloway, you don't understand how this works, okay? Dead is dead, right? So you might want to throttle back the curiosity factor and maybe be selectively curious, because curiosity in the units that are surrounded, and maybe you didn't know they were surrounded, and I could forgive you for that. But, you know, but again, you go into the randomness of life, right? And you see guys that are there for a short period of time, they get hit and killed quickly. And then you see a guy like that, who's in the midst of all of that. And he tells a story about a napalm strike that winds up hitting soldiers, and what that was like to try to deal with their bodies after they've been hit with napalm. And it's like, how do you not get a scratch, though? How do you not get a scratch? And so it
affects him for the rest of his life.
Right. Well, how could it not? Well, and again, that's just the first little – those are the first little bits of it, too. There's a lot more in store for Galloway. But let me play Marlanis's the audio from Marlanis here. And
no better than one in three.
And then they all sat down and voted for
This is Galloway right there. And they're talking about one in three was McNamara's assessment to Johnson about, even if we send a couple hundred thousand soldiers there and give Westmoreland what he's asking for, there's only one in three chance of what we're going to win. And then Galloway says, and then they all voted to do it.
Sat down and voted for option two.
My bitterness about the...
Okay, this is Marlanis right here.
The political powers at the time was, first of all, the line. I mean, I can understand a policy error that is incredibly, incredibly painful and kills a lot of people out of a mistake if they made that with noble hearts. That was, you know, when Eisenhower and Kennedy were trying to figure things out. And you read that, you know, McNamara knew by 65, it was just 3 years before I was there, that the war was unwinnable. That's what makes me mad. Making a mistake, people can do that, but covering up mistakes, then you're killing people for your own ego. And that makes me mad.
Tens of thousands.
Unbelievable.
It's tough to even watch.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, in 65, I was on a med cruise, and we heard about the Marines going into Da Nang. And truly, I can't remember ever hearing about Vietnam before that. And we were really hoping our whole BLT in the Mediterranean would get sent through the Suez and sent over to the end of Vietnam, because we were a well-trained, well-organized group. And it turned out they didn't. They sent us back. And here all this crap is going on in Washington. And like Marlanta says, they're making all these ridiculous, insane decisions, and they're lying to the American public about it. And Lord knows we've seen that again. And it goes on and on. And to me, since I got back from Vietnam, I've learned a lot of the history. I've seen a lot of this. I, you know, read Dereliction of Duty. I know what went on, but it's kind of frightening to see it in front of your television, watching it again.
So let's talk about that.
I'm overpowered by the program. It's extremely well done so far.
So if there's veterans that are listening to this that have said, I'm not going to watch it because we're just going to get fucked over again, like we have every time this shit happens, you would tell them what?
I would tell them, try it. I would tell them, give it a shot, take a look at it. You're better off if you start with the first program or the second program. Number three, it gets pretty hot and heavy, and it gets right into the nitty-gritty. But I think he does a very fair job of reporting not only what we were doing politically, what the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong were doing, which is amazing to see the interviews, and the interviews are the ones that survived. And then you also see some of the protesting and crap that went on back in the States. And it's going to open some wounds. It's going to be tough to watch, but it is worth it. It's like I said the other day, I tuned into this because Carl Marlantis recommended it on your program.
Right.
And I'm addicted to looking at it, but I can't watch it at night. I have to watch the tape of it in the morning when I'm fresh and my brain is clear. I don't want to go to bed thinking about that shit.
Probably a good move on your part. Give me a word that describes, I'll ask you two questions. Give me one word, and I use the word balance, to describe what I've seen so far. I'm somewhat interested as a storyteller myself in how Burns limits himself, because I'll be curious to see if he goes into the McNamara, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Johnson, all that stuff that is in Dereliction of Duty.
But Smallin and right. Creighton Abrams and
right.
all of that crap.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to tell relative to Vietnam. And so to me, so I'll ask you for one word, if you would describe it. I've used the word balance so far. And two, what you find to be the most interesting part to you anyway, Bob, so far. So give me one word to describe it. And then what have you found to be the most interesting?
I think balanced is a pretty good word, because what I've seen so far is balanced after studying and reading about Vietnam for 50 years since I got back. The thing that surprises me as in the third session is I can see myself getting in the country. I can see myself getting in the helicopter. I can see myself landing in the rice paddy. You gotta remember, I'm a newbie in the summer of 66. Don't know my ass from first base. I'm a senior first lieutenant. And I don't know what the hell I would have done if I had known all this background. But the Marine Corps had done a wonderful job of brainwashing me, which is what they're supposed to do. And I was prepared to go do it. And, you know, I got to Vietnam and...
Okay, hold on. Let me... So you did answer the second part of the question, and then I want to talk about what you were doing in 65 and you headed to Vietnam, because tonight's episode will be your time, I think, if they do it chronologically still, will be your time,
yes,
your time period in Vietnam. But what we saw last night was kind of what you walked into when you got there. So,
right.
What have you found to be the most interesting part, of it so far?
Is that the reaction of the troops that were there and the leaders on the ground were there were right on. And the reactions of the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, which I frankly never gave a shit about, were not a whole lot dissimilar from what ours were. And yet, what was going on in Washington, D.C. was in la-la land, but they were controlling the war.
Right.
I mean, that whole Gulf of Tonkin thing was ridiculous. And they're making decisions back in Washington without a clue. And you can see when they show up, the higher-ups show up in Vietnam, you know, there's McNamara in a suit walking around in Vietnam. Well, nobody walks around in suits in Vietnam.
Too hot.
I mean, and everybody, you know, there's 47 generals briefing them, and it's all bullshit. And all you had to do was go out and spend a goddamn day with the infantry or a couple of days anywhere. I don't care where it was, Mekong Delta or I Corps, you'd see what the hell's going on.
Well, for me, the most interesting part, and last night was the first time you saw, you know, heavy duty contact between American units and NVA units. I've never seen the NVA perspective in it, and they talked about what they learned in those first battles and how they had units that were just annihilated. The guys, you know, afterwards, they wouldn't get out of their rope hammocks, you know, other guys writing poetry about their experience and how they walked away from that, how difficult it was to have units just annihilated by, you know, American firepower. And if you didn't, what do they say, Bob? If you didn't grab them by the belt buckle and stay that close to them, you were going to be annihilated. So to me,
you're going to be wiped out.
Yeah, to me, it's.
But it only proved, Mike, Mac, that the numbers didn't mean anything.
To them.
I don't care if you had a 10-to-1 kill ratio.
Right.
Didn't mean anything. The only guys that believed that were the generals and the people in under McNamara that were doing graphic studies of how great we were doing.
Yeah. They were doing their quantitative analysis. Yeah, that meant something to
McNamara. You look at...
Who was the senator? In fact, there's an interesting quote last night. Abrams tells... I'm not sure if it's Abrams or Westmoreland. I think it's Westmoreland tells. I can't remember the name of the senator, but he comes over and he says, our kill ratio, you know, it's good 10 to 1. And the senator looks at him and he says, you don't understand, Westy.
Yep.
All right.
U.S. cares about is that one.
Nobody cares about the 10. They only care about the 1. And so, it's interesting. But as Bob said, you see this fragmented kind of world that exists for the United States. There's a view from Washington. There's a view that guys have when they get into country, and then they go out into the bush, if you will, and they discover that we're not winning here. And then what is it going to take to win here?
And who is the enemy?
Right. And who's the enemy?
Yeah. Who the hell is the enemy when you're in a village when everybody looks the same?
Right. And so last night was really the first night that you got a heavy dose, you know, episodes 1 and 2, kind of the history of how you get there. To me, the perspective of the NVA and the Viet Cong is something that I was thinking about that yesterday. In this age of mass media, how have we never seen that, Bob? I can understand the Iwo Jima thing. Those guys.
The press didn't want The press didn't want to put that stuff out.
I know, but still, Bob, it's 2017 now. You would have think between, right, 1972 and 2017, you could go online and see those guys talking about it. But I don't recall seeing a lot of it, their perspective of the war, like we're seeing on a nightly basis now.
I told you the day before yesterday, the Washington Post, in counter to all the public television program, comes out with a front-page story in the electronic version about Jane Fonda's visit to Hanoi in 1970. They dredge up the same old crap again and again and again.
Yeah.
And they finally drop the story, but that's the stuff that goes on. The other thing, Mac, that really hit me watching this was we see a repeat, not in 91, but in 2001, 2002, when we get ready to go into Iraq. You see the same old bullshit going on. Washington fabricating a whole bunch of lies they're going to lay on the public. And it just scares me to death because I see some of the same shenanigans going on with Korea right now. It just drives me insane. And you got to have the understanding and facts of this stuff. You've got to understand the people. Right. You've got to understand the culture.
I don't think we were understood in Vietnam ever. the only thing, you know, I hope is that we know today's version of Robert McNamara.
Right.
Right? We know today's.
The name is Donald Rumsfeld.
We know. In relative to Korea, it's a guy named Jim Mattis. We know today's version.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We know today's version of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Joe Dunford. And so,
that's the thing
right.
That's saving us.
Right.
That's the one element of sanity that can help keep us from doing stupid things.
Right. Right. What,
we can't be bad-mouthing and causing the leader of Korea to lose face in front of the United Nations. I've told you before, working in Southeast Asia, that losing face is worse than anything that can happen to Asians. You can't be doing that. It serves absolutely no value whatsoever.
My guest this morning, Bob Nielsen, he was a captain in Vietnam, and went there in 19, was there in 1966, 67. We're talking about the Ken Burns PBS documentary entitled The Vietnam War. Talk to us about where you were in 1965. You said you were on a med float. And then Vietnam gets on your radar. And then talk to us about who were you with? How did you get notified? Did you PCS to Pendleton and deploy from Pendleton? Talk to us about your path to Vietnam.
Oh, I joined the Marine Corps in 59 PLC. I got commissioned in 63. Went on the basic school September 63, and went down to 2nd Marine Division, went on Steel Pike where they sent the whole 2nd Marine Division over to Spain, came back, I did a Caribbean cruise where we were on an LPH down in the Caribbean, and then I couldn't stay in Camp Lejeune, so I volunteered for a med cruise, and in 1965 was on a med cruise in the Mediterranean for seven months. And so we weren't reading newspapers or watching TV every day. So I really didn't know anything about Vietnam until all of a sudden they decide to send a Marine regiment or something into Da Nang in 65. And obviously in the Marine Corps, that caught everybody's attention because everybody wanted to get out. You know, everybody wanted to go be part of it. You know, that's the first war that come along in 15 years.
You know, let me just stop you there. Now, just everybody needs to remember, these are the sons and the grandsons of World War I and World War II veterans, right, who saved the world. And they were itching, right, to be part of that.
They had an uncle had been on Guadalcanal.
Yeah, they wanted to be part of that tribe. And so when this happened, they were like, boom, I'm there. So it's very interesting to hear their perspectives and the clarity that some of them, because think about it. If you were a teenager in, let's just say, 1963, right? Your dad is probably a veteran. Your uncle's a veteran. Your grandfather might be a veteran from the First World War. Your teachers are veterans. Your coaches are veterans. Everybody, you know, most of the men that you had bumped into on a regular basis were veterans. And you wanted.
And if they weren't, you were embarrassed by it.
Yeah, and you wanted to be part of that.
Your parents weren't veterans. Yep.
You wanted to be part of that tribe, right?
So I got back from the med cruise. We weren't extended and sent over to Vietnam as we thought we were. And I was in the process of getting reassigned, but my 3 years was up that summer. And I said to myself, well, shit, Vietnam's going on. You know, I've been training for 8 years, 3 years full time for this. I can't miss this great opportunity. This is going to be fantastic. So I said I'd extend for another year if they sent me to Vietnam. And of course, Marine Corps willingly said, boy, we got a deal for you. And in the process of doing that, I said, man, there's a war going on. This is going to be great. I might as well put in for a regular commission, which I got. And I got over there, and it took me about 24 hours to realize I maybe made one of the dumbest decisions I ever made in my life. But it took a long, long time to really sink in. War, when you land in it, as opposed to what you watch on TV, Victory at Sea and the nightly news are two vastly different things.
Right.
And it was unbelievable. And I think that's what really woke me up this morning watching this public television thing is, God, you're seeing it right. And I've been there. I've been getting out of that goddamn helicopter in an assault landing. And I know what the hell it's like. And so, you know, it gets your blood circulating relatively fast.
I was thinking about that because there's a lot of video that I've never seen in this thing. And I think it's one of the first ones because of the time period that they're doing it that they've been able to use videotape. And because most of it is them panning in and out and trying to make still pictures come alive.
Right.
But they were able to go and get find a lot of historical, obviously film that you know hadn't been used that often, and so they've made great use of it. But one of it was in last night's episode was soldiers from the first cab. But you know the guy with the camera, he jumps out of the helicopter too, and they're running through rice paddies trying to get to the berm on the rice paddies. I thought about that when I watched it. I thought, you know what, guys watching this, they just got teleported.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you're looking around your living room to wonder, is it heat and humidity? You know,
something to hide behind. I've got an email for you. Mac, let me read you an email. No, you finish your thought. I don't want you to forget it, and then I'll read you the email.
Let me tell you, I've been there a couple of months, and we were out with the 5th Marines in some godforsaken village and rice paddies and all the shit and the salt from the village and everything. And we set up for the night, and the platoon I was with set up a perimeter and all this crap. And I guess I'd been there 2 months, so it's the early fall of 66. And I'm looking at this little village that we're in, and there's about 6 or 8 Vietnamese women and maybe a dozen kids and maybe one old man. And they're looking at our group of Marines like they came from outer space. We got helmets, we got radios, we got rifles, we got, you know, everything you can imagine. Everything but night goggles. And these, it dawned on me that this Vietnamese family in this little shitty village could care less about anything except tomorrow's bowl of rice. And they had no more clue what the difference between democracy and communism was, or having a 4-lane highway, or what a helicopter was. It didn't. You know, we were science fiction landed in their backyard.
But they,
and I said,
but they knew,
what are we doing?
But they knew foreigners. Did any of them yell, Vive la France?
Yeah. No. They didn't speak anything. They spoke Vietnamese. And we just, of course, didn't speak any Vietnamese. And we might as well have landed from the moon, and all they wanted to do was get rid of us, get the hell out of there. Right. And all they wanted to do was tomorrow's bowl of rice. The only thing they had connected to the 20th century was an aluminum pot. They didn't even have Sony Walkman at that time. Sony radios. And I said, what the hell are we doing here? We can spend 100 years here, and these people are still going to be worried about the bowl of rice.
Well, you know,
now, I realized in the rice paddy in 66, nobody in Washington is realizing that.
Right. Here's the email. Mac, I'm curious. It seems like everything I look at in Vietnam is wet. How did you keep your feet dry? How did you live like
you
that?
Didn't.
So what did you do? So explain to me. How do you walk around with your feet wet all day?
You keep changing socks. And, of course, your socks get wet. They don't really dry. And the monsoon season was 100 times worse. Read Carl Malantis' book. You know, you didn't stay dry. You didn't wear underwear. Underwear is useless.
Yeah. What is the point of underwear unless you're wearing slacks? Okay. I mean, I'm not sure why it was invented. I mean, maybe there's some cloth between you and your pants, so you know you don't spot your pants or anything like that. But come on, when you're working, like, who wears underwear? What are we, children? If it takes you a long time in the Marine Corps to figure that out, like, why am I wearing these stupid-ass boxers, all right? Because it's hotter than hell. Yeah. I'm sweating my ass
off. But in boot camp, you got to wear it.
Yeah.
You know, it's drilled into your brain, and you got to wear white ones.
You sure
as hell don't want that on.
No, exactly. But then you get rid of those things as quick as you can, but especially when it's humid.
When you're out in the rice paddies, you never get dry.
Never.
And the leeches are all over the goddamn place, and, you know, that's part of the turf.
Let me read you another email. I've been watching, and it reminds me of Afghanistan. Farmland. The difference is that poppy fields don't get flooded. The berms, them initiating every contact, that's Afghanistan. The agricultural areas, that's Afghanistan that we fought in. And seeing those guys running for the berms reminds me of my squad mates as we ran for berms to get our ass as low as we can so we wouldn't get stuck out in that field and shot up. Pretty interesting.
Exactly right.
Pretty interesting to watch.
And you don't want to walk on the berms most of the time because that's where the mines are going to be, or the pit with punchy stakes,
right,
or, you know,
and the same thing with natural choke points, right, Bob? So a stream.
Absolutely.
Right. All the same. All exactly the same.
And when you're in the goddamn rice paddy and you're going across towards the village, you can see 20 of your guys all spread out. You know, and somebody gets hit, man, it's right there. It's, you know, right in front of your nose.
And
Ken Burns does a hell of a job with that.
I just got this text message. I thought the same thing about Afghanistan and Nam last night watching it. Interesting the similarities, to include the characters played by Don Rumsfeld and Robert McNamara. Okay, who are we going to cast as the asshole, arrogant fuck that takes us down this road? How about this guy Rumsfeld? He seems to have all the qualities, and he seems like a natural to play McNamara. Let's recast this son of a bitch.
He even looks like McNamara. Jesus Christ, they came out of the same mold.
He does.
And then we'll throw in a Cheney and a couple of others, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, look, they fucked up the whole Middle East.
Cheney's never been in the military.
No, and what did Rumsfeld do? He was a lieutenant in the Navy doing something, I'm not sure.
And we can throw in a Wolfowitz and a Bremer. God, we got the whole Hollywood makeup here.
Oh, Bremer. I sat in some meetings with Ambassador Bremer. He couldn't get his ass. You know, we were supposed to tow. I can't remember what the day was. He secretly towed the day before and left. Like, is he
with a suit on?
Yeah, is he
with a suit on and work boots?
And combat boots. It was like the day of when we were. I can't remember what the thing was called, but the day we did it, and he was leaving. It was like, well, is he going to be at the ceremony? And somebody said, no, he left yesterday. What?
First going away party.
What do you mean he left? Yeah, he didn't want to stick around. Anyway.
Well, if nothing else, this documentary, I hope, is going to make some younger Americans open their minds and think about what the hell we're doing, who you elect for office, why we need more veterans involved in running this government, and why we need to listen to the goddamn veterans that have been out there and been through this shit. I mean, it is so important.
Let me read you another one. Mac, it's been interesting. I started listening over a year ago, and although you don't know me, I know you. Uh-oh. I spend a little bit of most of my weekdays with you. I know your family. I know your kids. I know Colleen. I've heard her sing. I've heard Patrick's OC. Hold on. Whoa. If you have my credit report from Equifax, I can explain a lot of that shit, okay? Some of it I can't, and I would ask your mercy. So if that's where this is going, when you played Marlanis's audio and then couldn't talk, I had the same reaction. Carl Marlanis is a Navy Cross winner.
Yeah. He's a Rhodes Scholar.
He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a tough dude. Right? He did not grow up like a pussy. He's from Oregon. He told that story about the boat that he was on with his grandpa as he was helping his grandpa fish, almost sinking in the Columbia River.
Yep.
And when you hear his voice halt.
Quivering.
And last night, if you were watching it, you could see his lip quiver. That's how violated Vietnam veterans, and I think what I'm feeling from Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, they are on the verge of that. They're not there yet, but I do agree with you, and I wasn't there. The similarities between Rumsfeld and McNamara are scary. Absolutely, positively fucking scary. I'm still watching The Road to 9/11. I have yet to get to the point where Rumsfeld brings up Iraq. If it is the way you and Gunner says it was, that will blow my vacuum tubes. Appreciate the program. Marlanis is great so far in just a little bits he's been in. It's like he's the soul of the program. What a great guy. What a deep guy. How the fuck did he get in the Marine Corps? I agree with you. We don't normally get those guys, let alone as infantrymen. Yeah, I need to ask Marlanis, how did you fuck that one up, man? You probably had some options as a Rhodes Scholar, bro. How did you wind up as a grunt?
He was in trouble. He should have been a combat engineer and not a grunt.
Yeah, you know, Zinni tells the story like, I was a Ginzo from Philly, and back when I went through the basic school, there was no one-third, one-third, one-third bullshit. Zinni, you're in the bottom. You're going to go be a grunt. He said, that's the way it was. Oh, shit, he's funny. But Marlanis, you had some options, man. What the hell happened to him? But, yeah, you know what?
I had a next-door neighbor stop over this morning who's also a Vietnam vet, and I said, I can't talk. I'm watching public television from last night. And he looks at me. He gives me the package he had, and he says, I watched it last night. He said, that's tough. Now, he'll continue watching, and he was in the Army. I think he was motor transport in the Army in some remote places. But you could see last night shook him up. And I think it's going to be true of a lot of veterans.
A lot of people don't know. I mean, and look, wait a week. You know what I'm really interested to see? I'm really interested to see that the Viet Cong and the NVA perspective of Tet, because they got annihilated in Tet.
Yeah.
And that was 68. So
I believe General Giap has admitted that.
Right.
General Giap, the public have come out and said they were all but wiped out.
Right. And so I that perspective. But again, the one of the things that you heard last night was that the Americans will count their bodies. We will not. That's irrelevant to us in terms of the North Vietnamese perspective. That this war has gone on for our independence for, as you said, 1,000 years. And so so it will continue, and we will not be deterred by this. So,
and thank God in Iraq and Afghanistan we didn't get caught up in body counts again, because it really doesn't mean anything.
Well, I mean,
it sounds good if you're out in the shooting range, but it doesn't mean anything else anywhere else.
You know what you get though, and you can tap into this, Nielsen, if you want to on a daily basis, if you care to. If you get the Twitter feed from, commandants on, at the Marine something that modern day Marine Expo in Quantico. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, so he's rolling around there. He's actually tweeting from it. But anyway, there is a, I can't remember, what's the operation, blah, 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 going on right now in Iraq and Syria. They have their own Inherent Resolve, okay? Operation Inherent Resolve, if you subscribe to them on Twitter, right, here's what you'll get, and I asked Zinni about it. This is 5 hours old. Coalition forces conducted 44 airstrikes consisting of 50 engagements against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. You can find out more if you click on this article. And I asked him, I said, is that akin to the body count? He said, that's exactly what that shit is.
The 2017 version.
Right. He said, what's it relevant to? Right. We struck. We flew this many swords. Who gives a shit? Are we winning or losing? And so, so we see remnants of the body count. Irrelevant.
Mac, if I tune
irrelevant activity, as he would call it.
If I tune into one more thing in the military, my wife of almost 50 years is going to leave me. She won't touch the public television program. She lost her best friend who was killed in Vietnam before I got home. And she wants no part of it. She thinks I'm insane watching this.
Really? Well, you know what?
I got so many bad feelings that have been stirred up for 50 years.
Let sleeping dogs lie. But again, it's a huge part of your life. And how do you can't let it go.
Well, it's really
a lot of guys, it's Ken Burns doing it, right?
That guy with the funny haircut?
Yeah, he's got a brutal haircut.
He looks like a hit by a truck.
He looks like Prince Valiant. If he grew it out longer and back, the mullet, he'd be Prince Valiant. And, but no, if it would be done by Spike Lee, I don't know that a lot of people would watch it, or at least a lot of veterans might not watch it, you know, but I think Ken Burns' credibility from the different work he's done, you know, I think, and again, when I say this, I'm mindful of, you know, my neighbor's a Vietnam veteran. And he's told me the same thing you told me the other day. You gave it an A-, and he said, I'd give it an A. He said, I think it's been fair. You know, and I just got an email from a guy that was at Quezon that I want to come on the program and essentially do what I'm doing with you. And he wrote this. Great to hear from you. I'd be delighted to talk about my impressions so far of Ken Burns' documentary. It looks like it'll be an episode or two before he gets to the period where I served. However, I've done considerable research into the war and I've written about it. So far, I found the first three episodes fundamentally balanced considering the complexity of the situation. And the diversity of the players in this year. To me, balance to a Vietnam veteran the way you guys have been shit on? That's like, how big of a win is that?
Yeah, and Mac, we need the truth to be told because we've been bullshitted for 50 years.
Right.
The press incessantly loves to bullshit us, and Hollywood's even worse. We talked to Jim Webb someday about Hollywood trying to get a fair production of his the books he wrote, forget it.
Fields of Fire. Well, no, and as you said,
now type crap.
Right. So this huge, like last night's episode was 2 hours. So this huge endeavor that's taken 10 years to make comes to market. And what does the Washington Post throw up?
Yeah. Jane Fonda, 1970 story in Hanoi. Come on.
Yeah, that's the teaser. That's like putting the, you know, it's just so, it's in my opinion, it's so
pathetic.
I told
my wife I was going to cancel the subscription.
Yeah, I know.
I told my wife I was going to cancel the subscription. She says, you can't. I read the comics.
You can find them someplace else. Here's another email. Mac, I'm curious, following Nielsen into Vietnam, he got there in what month of what year?
I got there in July, late June or July, 66.
Okay, and you landed where? Where did you, Da Nang?
We went over by ship, got it off in Da Nang, and then they flew me down to Chu Lai where I joined First Shore 40.
Okay, so, all right, so we're pretty close to the point at which you enter the country. And when we were, so this, the buildup is still going on when you arrive, or you're part of the buildup, yes?
Well, in my impression, we were pretty goddamn built up when I got there. I mean, Da Nang was fully operational. Chu Lai was fully operational. You know, I thought, God, we had 10 million people there,
right.
Or at least it seemed like it.
Right.
Till you got out of the main bases.
Okay. All right. All right. Anything else you want to say about last night's episode before I let you go?
No, it was great. People, tune into this. It's worth watching. Also, take a look at what we're doing with 100 entrepreneurs. And Turner is now processing 5 veterans for jobs. And we're still looking for 35 more. So if you're interested, send an email to, jobs at allmarineradio.com. And we'd love to help you.
Yeah.
But it's worth watching this, guys and gals.
Yeah. On both notes, if you have somebody that's transitioning, then by all means, tell them about, just send Bob a resume, jobs@allmarineradio.com. We're not talking about just a job. We're talking about a career that embraces veterans. That's a global company. And, we've had a number of guys, that have come on that have gone that route. Some have stayed at Turner. Others have gone other places. And I'll recommend it as a company that does good things for veterans. So Bob at the heart of that. So well done, Nielsen, and thanks for the visit today. And don't be surprised if I call you again.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
All right. That'll
thank
do
you. Bye.
That is Bob Nielsen, former captain. United States Marine Corps, Vietnam, 1966-1967. We are going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear Senate Armed Service Committee testimony. And pretty interesting stuff. I'm not going to bore you with the whole hearing. Not that that's boring. Maybe I will at some point, but I won't today. I want you to hear about the last 40 minutes of it. So, having said that, don't touch that dial. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nelson. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.